Siren Radio.
Wonderful. That's what we say, and we say again, wonderful. And the weather forecast today, highs of 24 degrees centigrade, lows of 10 degrees centigrade, and the overall outlook is a day which is going to be sunny and breezy.
The Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions with Alex Levchuk and the Midweek Drivettes on Siren 107.3 FM, a 21st century radio programme with 23rd century philosophies.
Marvellous. Stephanie Romoshevsky is with us again from the Sleepyhead Clinic. Stephanie, talking on the programme so far with Shaley, who graduated last year, and of course Holly and George, who are graduating this year, about careers and pathways and so on. What led you to actually become, you know, the founder of the Sleepyhead Clinic and pursue the whole notion of sleep physiology?
Oh, that's a really good, interesting question. I did a degree in psychology to start with, and I had one of those placement years. I'm not sure if they still do this. I think they do, where you can go off and do a year of experience in whatever area you want to do. And we had a very good opportunity at our university to go to Harvard Medical School and do some sleep research. And part of that was working with NASA and getting their astronauts onto 25-hour days and all sorts of weird and wonderful stuff to do with sleep. And so my eyes were open to this whole other world, which at the time you couldn't really get a degree in. You couldn't just go and do sleep medicine. So that's kind of where it started. And then Sleepyhead was born because we weren't really dealing with this epidemic that we have in this country when it comes to insomnia. So we were dealing with all the other organic sleep problems like sleep apnea, narcolepsy, all these other weird and wonderful illnesses. But we weren't dealing with the one that was the most common, or we weren't dealing with it very well. We were dealing with it with sleeping pills, and there's no sort of long-term real good evidence to show that sleeping pills will actually fix insomnia. But we do have another treatment which is very behavioral based, which does have really good efficacy, but we weren't using it. So that's how Sleepyhead was born.
Fantastic. And clearly, Stephanie, when you become the first human being to set foot on the planet Mars, because you'll be sorted out on that basis, we will say, yeah, that's the whole solar system. I mean, talk about working with NASA. I mean, would you consider some extraterrestrial surveys? Because clearly, as you rightly said, you know, we are heading out there. We just heard on the news about TESS and the extraterrestrial work, etc.
So it's really interesting what we're doing and what Elon Musk is doing right now with trying to get us onto Mars, or at least making it sort of feasible. And my issue is that Mars is a different type of day to an Earth day. So we are on about 24 hours. And Mars is on about 24 hours and 39 minutes or so. And although that doesn't seem like a lot of difference, if you can imagine staying up on a Mars day every day, your sleep pattern is going to shift, and you're going to eventually shift through all the different time zones that we have here. So you're going to become very jet lagged, and it's going to make you feel very ill. And so we wouldn't actually be able to survive on the light dark cycle in the way that we do here. And so my question is, how are we going to resolve that? So if we do go there, if we have to go there, what happens? Do we live underground, or you know, is there? I would love to know. I would love to hear from Elon Musk and find out what we're at. How is a human going to live there?
Stephanie, we're going to bowl that out. Meanwhile, Holly, have you got any thoughts or responses to that? I mean, you know, in Brighton, you might have sort of come up with the solutions already.
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting, really.
Exactly.
Yeah. Big question.
But yeah, there's so many things saying no, really, isn't there?
As I mean, we've talked about the dissertations that you've actually just done. Literally, it's hand in date for yourself tomorrow. Is it all done? Is it all sorted? Or will you be burning the final midnight oil to get the abstracts and things put together?
I just need to print and bind, I think. Mm-hmm. That's where my head's at. I don't really want to read through it again because I'll probably panic, but maybe I should. I think George is pretty much there.
So that's a certain amount of relax. And can you cast your mind back a year ago, Shaley?
Oh, my goodness. I don't remember being stressed, but, don't read it after you've handed it in because I'm super critical and there was several grammatical errors. And you just have to ignore them. You did the best you could.
It's just not the same with getting out the Tippex at that moment
that
in time.
That is very true,
No.
I just have a question about the astronauts. How do you sort of sync their circadian rhythms to stay up for the 25-hour thing?
Well, that's it. We haven't yet. We can shift somebody's sleep cycle. We know that, so we can put you onto a cycle that's very abnormal for you. But in terms of actually changing the timing of it, and for a consistent amount of time so that you could live like that, is a whole different ball game. And whether you could do it to the general population is a whole other thing. We do know that everybody's circadian phase, so their circadian rhythm and sleep-wake cycle is one of those, is slightly different for everybody. So some people are slightly less than 24 hours, some people might be slightly more than 24 hours. So maybe what we're looking at is trying to test people and see who has the right sleep cycle that could actually cope with this, and do we need to study them more and figure out, you know, what can we do to try and push it a little bit so that we can actually have a slightly longer day. But yeah, I don't know what the answer is yet. There's lots of different types of research, genetic research going on at the moment. But I would like to know if anyone's got the answer out there. But I don't think we do right now.
It's like engaging with the Netflix series Lost in Space, doing a Space Family Robinson.
Oh yeah.
Very, very good. George, any questions or thoughts from yourself?
Not really, I just find it all so fascinating.
Well, there we are. And that's life, you see. That's why we should enjoy it. Keep on going. As we've said, if you're still alive, it means your mission on the planet isn't over. And Holly, I'm going to put you on the spotlight now because I'm going to see if you can remember those last two questions that you can now generously put over to Exodus. It's like Brighton, Lincoln and Exeter. It's like the meeting of nations here. And Mars, of course. Exactly. Any Martians listening, to connect with your good self. In fact, we talked about them last night, actually, on the grounds of my favourite Martian and Arthur Weingarten, in which when he actually was criticised about his script with the line that the producer had written, a Martian wouldn't say this. Holly, last two questions, please.
Stephanie, how have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
Yes, thank you. As usual, very good.
And will you return in the foreseeable future?
Yeah, as long as you've got sleep questions, I'm here to answer them.
There's going to be a never-ending cycle of those.
We have students on board, you will have many questions.
Such a critical part of the whole thing, really. Yeah. Stephanie Robyshevsky, a reminder, of course, you can go directly to sleepyhead.co.uk or sleepyheadclinic.co.uk, to be precise, sleepyheadclinic.co.uk, to find all manner of other wonderful things from that point of view. We should really have a trek down to Exeter just to actually do a location report, shouldn't we?
That'd be lovely.
Yeah. We will look to that and get it sorted. Stephanie, take care.
Oh, thank you. Bye-bye.
looking ahead about 48 hours from now, and it's not the film challenge, but it will be Sci-Fi Scarborough, and then shortly after that is Sci-Fido, and the May the 1st, May the 7th Sci-Fi London Film Festival, and clearly we've got all sorts of excitements to get together with respect to that, but if we want some advice in terms of how to cope with this, and Shaylee, your first experience of Sci-Fi Scarborough.
I'm excited.
All right, good. We've got Emma Tinson online now. In many ways, it's Auntie Emma because she provides sage and words of wisdom and advice since graduating 2 years ago now, I believe, Emma, when you actually sort of headed off into the wild blue yonder to become a media coordinator extraordinaire. Is that
it
right?
It is indeed. It doesn't feel like it's been that long. It's flown by.
Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is that as George and Holly McGee will actually attest to, they do actually still have in the media school the plaque which says Luke Terry was here. That's where they're. And indeed, we do the same in journalism for your good self. Emma Tinson was here. But except in journalism, it's spelled WOZ, which is fine. It's only kiddie here. It's all there. We've just been sharing thoughts about dissertations, hand ins, and various other sort of factors, and speaking with our sleepy head clinic expert, Stephanie Romaszewski. Did you catch any of that, Emma, or is it a case of no, you are precy?
No, I've been really busy this morning, actually. I'm afraid I've missed it. You'll have to fill me in.
Oh, we just say listen to the podcast. That's what it's there for. Holly, have you spoken to Emma before? Have you? Did your path not correct? I mean, interesting enough, because Holly actually came to the Midweek Drive simply because she used to wander past the studio and wonder what her fellow colleague from Brighton, Ben Lewis, was getting up to behind the glass, really. And that's why we sort of addressed a whole range of other factors within that.
I feel like Ben Lewis is a distant memory now.
No, he will be back.
Is he on placement?
He's in with Bentley, which is what you expect, because he only can actually work with a placement company that actually has his name in the title somewhere. Yeah. It's Ben from Bentley. Bentley Ben.
It's a new school.
But he will be back, I believe, in May. So maybe he can be bombed by, as you're staking around, Holly. Maybe you can connect to it. Exactly. Very strange. But we're waffling again to the average listener at 15 minutes past 9 o'clock, 9:15. They don't care about that at all. Get to the point. Get to the essence of the whole thing here. Emma, you've travelled quite extensively as well since graduating, as well as looking after a whole heap of others. Hannah Brown is about to hand her a dissertation, folks. We're just making that break there. She's got a dissertation in hand and she's waving it. Sorry,
she
Emma,
looks
but
ecstatic. She's like, finally, it's over.
It was breaking news. So we kind of just wanted to sort of roll that through there. Is she using the elevator or is she actually sort of using
She's using the stairs.
She's bounding, much like you did. But at least, I mean, you did your dissertation on superheroes, so it actually wasn't superheroes.
I did. Yeah. And actually, funnily enough, I chiefly wore a Superman t-shirt on the day I handed it in, just to make myself feel like a superhero.
Nice. But you are Emma. I mean, that's the critical critical line. I've been, but it's super Tinston, basically. ST. Where are we going with respect to this? Oh yes, Holly. In terms of questions for Emma since graduating, because again, she's done. And you didn't connect with Emma when she was around on the show, so you have disconnected on that. Maybe you'd like to find out what Louis Savvy is really like, because Emma's met him in person. Emma has not done the 24-hour film challenge, which you have twice. But anything else? She's very amenable. We've got 4 minutes.
Did you have fun and then get into work, or did you get into work and then have fun?
Or is work fun as well?
Or did you choose a fun work?
It's just fun time.
A bit of both, really. I mean, I was actually applying for jobs while I was still at uni. I was furiously doing my dissertation every day and then also looking for jobs as well, because I was desperate to get work straight away because I knew it would be really tough to get a job. But as happens to most people, I didn't get one straight away. I got a lot of freelance work, so I did have a lot of spare time. So I actually planned a few bits of travelling and had a lot of nice catch-ups with old friends in between. But then obviously got full-time work and have been very busy ever since.
Exactly. And still maintains her Midweek Drive Out duties, which is only work, really. Sorry.
Of course.
And the other thing I was going to ask you, basically, Emma, is as you've travelled as well extensively, we're doing a feature with Vincent Simone. Vincent Simon. Born initially, of course, and former Strictly Come Dancing star, who is maintaining that it's very good to make more of an effort if you go overseas to speak the local language. When you were over in Japan and Hong Kong, and was it just a case of, look, I am Emma Tinson. If you can't speak my language, frankly, you should not actually go back to school.
Do you know what? In Tokyo, I obviously did not know a lot of Japanese, so I relied very much on everyone else knowing a little bit of English. But actually, Tokyo is such a futuristic city. They're already ready to have all these guests come over. And it's quite bizarre, actually. You go into a restaurant to order some food, and you can order it all off an iPad that has English writing on it. So it's amazing. We didn't actually struggle that much with the language because everything was ready for us. So it was amazing. But I wish I did know Japanese. That would be fabulous.
Ni hao.
Ichi ni san.
Domo morigato, Emma-san. Sorry, a few minor things. I mean, Domo Morigato, Mr. Roboto was, of course, one of the classic tracks of the early 80s. Thank you very much. Hi! Yes. Hi. And such like stuff. One of my students actually went off to Japan. In fact, actually, we have another one of our midweek drive vets who's offering Japan at present, Natasha Armstrong.
She's
teaching this. It's obviously part of the sort of grand colony. Emma was deep in under deep cover, just sorting out things there, just checking things out. Emma and Luke going under deep cover to sort through that whole side of things there. Does that help, Holly, in terms of advice or things to do as well?
Well, freelance is definitely an option that has been pushed onto us media students. So, I guess I should probably look into that.
Part of the ritual. And do you suffer from hay fever, Emma?
I do. It's not struck me yet, but I do normally get it.
Well, then you might be interested in a feature we're actually going to be doing with meteorologist Claire Nazir, who'll be talking about how hay fever can actually be worse in urban areas than in town areas. No, than in countryside areas. Yes, exactly. Well, worse in the... Sometimes I think the script could do with a bit more rehearsing.
I actually had it really bad when I was in Lincoln. That's the worst I've ever had it, the 3 years I was over there. Mm. So I'm quite glad to be in London now, actually.
It's not surprising. I mean, most people are a bit allergic to Lincoln in some way, shape or form. But it's all right. Don't worry. We can offer you masks. They'll help, you know, tremendously. It's all good stuff. Shaylee, go on for all the last two questions for Emma Tinson, please.
E.T., have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
Would she phone home? Sorry, I've waited for years for that. You know, there we are.
I have very much indeed, thank you.
Perfect, and will you be back in the near future?
Yes, I'm sure I will be.
See you then.
That would probably be next week, actually. Now, if we're looking for dancing, obviously this is a chance to actually flag up your... share with us, Emma, where can people find your movie critics and film movies and things online and so on? And I should have actually sent you the link. I will do this after the show to the movie that George and Holly have actually just put together for the Sci-Fi Film London Challenge. But where can people locate your stuff if they want to find out more material?
For on-screen... film reviews and things like that. I'm currently working for a company called Videoblog with 2 G's at the end. Mm-hmm. So it's videoblog.com.
Marvellous. That's what we wanted to hear. Videoblog2G's.com. Go for it. Emma will return probably next week, okay?
Yeah, fabulous.
approaching the notion of exam season and probably hay fever as well. 9 million people in the UK could be suffering from the effects of pollination. And 89% of Brits are actually unaware that symptoms can be worse in cities than in the countryside. As we said, for exam candidates, can be a nightmare scenario. Now, to address some of the research that's released today by Boots UK, which reveals a long-standing misconception about this whole notion of hay fever, air pollution, and so on, we've got two fantastic individuals. First of all, meteorologist extraordinaire and top TV presenter, the legendary Claire Nazir. How are you, Claire?
Wow, what an introduction. That's fantastic. Thank you.
It's only appropriate. And the equally legendary pharmacist extraordinaire, that'd be Natalie Masters. How are you, Natalie?
Hi, I'm very well, Alex.
Excellent. Claire, if we can come to you first, because clearly we've become used to meteorologists over the years flagging up high pollen counts, and it can be all challenging and so on. But this whole notion of actually having worse symptoms in the city than in the countryside, most folk think, oh, I'm not in the country, I won't be bothered with hay fever, etc. That's just for country folk.
Yes, you're absolutely right, Alex. I mean, to be honest, you wouldn't really think that in a city there'd be a lot of pollen blowing around, really, because obviously there are some trees, but more so in the countryside. However, the combination, and we call it the perfect storm of pollen combined with high levels of air pollution, really makes those hay fever symptoms worse. So people, when they're commuting to work, say in Lincoln or Grantham or Boston, you think, I've got these hay fever symptoms, I've just checked the forecast, that's the pollen forecast, and the counts are low. We haven't taken into consideration the fact that the air pollution levels could be moderate or high, and that's what's making these symptoms worse, and people aren't aware of that.
Most folk quite like the smell of freshly cut grass, but that's, of course, something else that can be a signifier of challenges that we're going to be faced with.
Absolutely, and, you know, the season is long in the UK. It starts with tree pollen, and, you know, we see a peak in tree pollen around the third week of April, so we've got that to look forward to as well. And combined with the weather this week, which we are celebrating the sun, high pressure in charge, we're going to see temperatures across Lincolnshire up to 22, 23 degrees Celsius by Thursday. You know, we want to be outside. We want to be enjoying the fresh outdoor air. But, you know, pollen levels will increase. They're high at the moment. And air pollution levels are likely to increase through Thursday in particular across Lincolnshire as the wind shifts around to a southeasterly direction. We drag in some sort of dirtier air from the near continent. So it's that lethal combination of pollen and high air pollution which could make your hay fever symptoms worse through the next few days. And it's worth being aware it's not just the pollen count.
Indeed, and that really, Claire, is one of the reasons why you consistently would win our award for Best Weather Presenter of the Year, not just 2011, every year, decade, century.
Thank you.
Let's move back to Natalie, if we may. Natalie, you've got some worthwhile advice in terms of city dwellers who can maybe manage their systems and symptoms more effectively.
Yes, that's right. We recommend three different ways to ease and manage your hay fever symptoms by popping into store and having a chat with one of the pharmacy team. We recommend taking hay fever and allergy relief tablets that will help with your common symptoms of hay fever, alongside a nasal spray to help target sneezing, itching and runny nose. And eye mist is also really useful to focus on soothing and relieving your irritated and itchy eyes. Also, you can do some practical tips like putting some petroleum jelly inside your nostrils to help the pollen from sticking to the lining of your nose, giving your clothes a good shake before you come into the house to remove excess pollen, having a shower, changing your clothes to wash off pollen, and also putting wraparound sunglasses on to protect your eyes from pollen when you're out and about and commuting into town.
Yes, the wraparound sunglasses is quite an interesting sort of factor in more ways than one from that point of view. Claire, have you noticed this getting worse over the years? Or is it a case of, no, we've had that for the duration of the last few decades, and as long as I've sort of been a meteorologist, there's always been a case of high pollen counts and so on? Or is it a case of becoming more allergy prone?
I think it's a combination of many things, to be honest, Alex. The air pollution levels are consistently getting worse year on year, depending on the weather environment. But, you know, across many cities of the UK, they're breaching the legal limits for air pollution many times through a year. And it's worse during the morning as well as the afternoon. So we're talking commuter time, when kids are walking to school, when people are cycling along those busy roads. So I have noticed an increase in air pollution, particularly when the weather is settled. But not only that, I think more and more people are more aware of their hay fever symptoms. Now, if you think about it, 9 million people are affected by this sort of pollination. And during some parts of the summer, it must be absolutely awful. I noticed when I lived in the city, I had hay fever symptoms, and I never suffered from hay fever symptoms when I was growing up, and I grew up in the South Midlands. But living in the city, it really was noticeable year on year, and it got worse. I now live in the countryside again, and those symptoms have eased. And this is the key thing. We are not aware that hay fever symptoms can be worse in the city rather than the countryside. And this is the research which is really raising awareness of this. It's like, really check your pollen forecast, but also check your air pollution forecast every day and just see what the combination is, and take precautions if you think you will be suffering.
And Natalie, best place to go to find out further information, would it be Boots UK or the standard website for Boots?
Yes, so you can pop along into store and have a chat with one of the pharmacy team, and they can give you plenty of tips and advice on how to manage your hay fever, or go online, boots.com, where there's lots more information available.
Personally, I always think that if you're interested in meteorology whatsoever, probably the best source of information is the regular column that you produce, Claire, for the Huffington Post. It's a whole range of sort of fascinating things in that side of things. And it shows, obviously, when you've got a BSc in maths and an MSc in oceanography, how you can obviously bring quality across the base. Claire, any other sort of suggestions or advice that you'd put forward from your own perspective in terms of this notion of the wonderful portmanteau word pollination?
Pollination, well, again, I think it's just people being aware. And also just kids, you know, children love playing out in the summer. And just be aware that certain times of the day, their symptoms could be worse. It's worth checking the Met Office forecast. We do a forecast every day for air pollution as well as pollen. And, you know, now we're forearmed, aren't we? So we are forewarned as well. So it's great advice that Boots are giving. And from my point of view, it just makes my job a little bit easier when I am issuing those forecasts every day.
Been fantastic sharing some thoughts with your good selves this morning. Have you both had a reasonably interesting and hopefully allergy-free piece with us today? Has it been okay for you, Claire and Natalie?
Oh, it's just your company is all we need, Alex.
Oh, right. You see, this is clearly our regular monthly forecast links with John Ketley. John's going to have to, he's going to step away. You know, clearly, Claire, you just wipe the floor from that perspective. Renaissance woman.
Cheers.
Claire Nazir and Natalie Masters, many thanks to you. Take care now.
Thank you.
Bye.
Wondrous. And from hay fever on to language and issues relating to language, it's tremendous now to be able to finally welcome to the production somebody we've spoken about in hushed tones as the programme's proceeded. Of course, we're talking about that fantastic former Strictly dancer, the awesome Vincent Simone. How are you, Vincent?
Hello. Oh, I'm all right, thank you.
Okay, bella. I'm wondering, we could have actually said it's just Vincent Simon or Vincenzo Simone. All sorts of areas within this.
I know, I've got different personalities. That's what my wife says.
Well, there you go.
You can choose.
Well, interesting. Now, since we spoke a wee while ago, there's this whole notion of language and British people basically not willing to learn the local language. We've spoken to Emma Tinson. She said when she was over in Hong Kong, everything's translated for her. She doesn't need to worry about that. It's all sort of through that. And yet you would say, quite rightly, why not make that effort to learn a little bit of the language before you go? Because it can pay dividends.
No, definitely. Definitely. I mean, obviously, I'm from Italy. I've got it here. The research from Villa Plus shows that actually Italian is the number one language that people like to be able to speak. I call it the language of the love. That's how I call it. But yes, I did come across about that when I moved to England about 20 years ago. And literally, you guys didn't give me an option. I either speak English or that's it. The same thing happens when you go abroad. Obviously, I've got my wife. She's English as well. And when we go to Italy, when I take her to my beautiful place, Puglia, down south, it's very characteristic that there's lots of Italians, obviously, because that's where they live. And yes, you don't have an option. They try to speak Italian, and that's it. So my wife was struggling in the beginning to the point where she had to learn and say a few sentences in Italian. And there you go. Now she loves it.
It's crossing that boundary now. In the studio, we've got Shaylee McKenzie. Shaylee, I believe the McKenzie family, huge, huge big fans of Strictly Come Dancing.
They are indeed. They would probably say, especially Mama McKenzie.
And it's never been the same since Vincent actually moved on, really, clearly, from that sort of point of view. But any questions that you've got about the research that you'd like to put to Vincent today?
So apart from Italy and obviously English, is there any other languages that you can speak?
I can speak a bit of French.
Nice.
My dad... is, well, is Italian, but he lived in Paris most of his life. So I've got my auntie, my cousins, which they're still in Paris, and throughout my childhood, I had to, you know, listen to this beautiful language as well, especially when women talk French. I just melt. So yes, I can speak a bit of French, a bit of Spanish. I just bought a property in Spain, and you know, as people know, Italian and Spanish are quite similar. So I get away with the Spanish people by talking Italian. They do understand me. I still don't understand them perfectly, but it's something that I'm planning to do because I want to learn, you know, the language. I want my children to learn the language as well. I think it's polite when you're into a different country and you try your best.
Definitely, yeah.
Well, you said, of course, how different people have different accents and words on that. Mm. Holly, any thoughts or considerations from yourself? I mean, Brighton is a very cosmopolitan part of the world.
Yeah, it is. I was going to ask, do you say it's Italian is the language of love? Would you not say dance is the language of love?
Well, I've got the best of both worlds, don't I? It's one of the perfect man in the world. Yes, I mean, we've got the research here from Villa Plus, as I said, and Italian is the number one language. I mean, even the simple things, like I'm going to go and throw the rubbish away. In Italian, it sounds like vado a buttare la spazzatura. And the women just melt.
puddles in the studio, you know, across the whole Lincoln base.
Chores are made sexy.
It's unbelievable.
Well, I mean,
it definitely is a very romantic language.
And do you find that when an Englishman, for instance, attempts Italian, you know, per l'ora, per il momento, chi vorrà, something like that?
I love it.
Yeah. Does it not sound sort of slightly artificially, or is it just a case of, oh, bless them, you know, they're doing their best?
No, you see, from the Italian point of view, when, you know, you guys try to speak Italian, it sounds so delicious and so cute. Literally, if you said a few Italian words there, if you were here in front of me, I'll give you a hug. That kind of feeling, because it sounds really cute when when you guys try to speak a different language. That's my opinion, anyway.
George, I mean, you could always consider in the screenplay that the sort of sound of a Brit trying to speak Italian and sounding cute.
Yeah, definitely try and put the effort in for those rom-coms, isn't it?
Is that Vincent cute as in like a little hamster on a wheel, or is it cute as in a kind of bless, etc.?
Well, it depends. It depends what point of view you look at it, but. I mean, going back to the language situation, because I do it as well. I have to be honest. When I go to different, because I travel the world literally, and I go full out and try to speak English wherever I go, and expecting the people do understand English, which is mostly what happens. I have to be honest these days where you go. But actually, I remember reading not long ago that the first language spoke in the world, the most popular language is Mandarin. Then you've got Spanish, and then I think English comes in third place. So it is popular, but not. I would have thought English would be the first language in the world, but it's actually not.
Because English is actually considered to be one of the hardest languages to learn, just because of how many words there are that. Written down look the same, but spoken in different tones and stuff.
Yeah,
it's a whole new world. VillaPlus.com is the go-to web address to find out further details, presumably about this research and more. That's VillaPlus.com. It's been fantastic just sharing some thoughts with yourself this morning, Vincent. Any particular language you'd really like to learn? I mean, you haven't got a secret hankering for Mandarin or Lithuanian or some other sort of exotic area?
No, I think I'm going to concentrate on Spanish because obviously I'm the tango king, as they call me. And, going to Argentina, and as I say, I get away talking Italian, but I want to understand them as well. So Spanish will be my priority from now on.
I see. Well, I mean, you look at people like David Silva, of course, and other fine Spanish footballers. They've obviously got that sort of magical thing that's there as well. Let's not talk about Pep Guardiola. In fact, let's move on. Vincent, it's been fabulous, as we said, connecting with you today. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme? Has it been okay for you?
Yes, lovely. This is every good minute of it.
So can we look forward to welcoming you again in the very near future?
Please.
Well then, just for the ladies and folks in Lincoln, I'm going to just invite you to introduce the next record, and introduce it, if you may, in Italian. It's Lionel Richie and Dancing on the Ceiling. Over to yourself, please.
Okay. La prossima canzone sarà dal famosissimo Lionel Richie, and it's called, e si chiama, Dancing on the Ceiling.
Genius. A round of applause, please. I mean, that's just fantastic. Bravo. Stuff there. Bravo. Bellissimo.
Say, you give me one more. One more like tonight. Let me have a stick. Wait a minute. I'm telling you, the crowd is great, the people out there screaming, hollering, it's happening, man. Wait, what's happening down at the end of the hall? Okay, come on.
Just been reminded, of course, by Shaley that Lionel Richie is coming to Lincoln. Probably not in Italian, but he will be there in the very near future. That and the joys of Little Mix. Outrageous. But I know, George, the moment has come, and Holly, where we can actually say the verdict will be in. The verdict of our film critic extraordinaire, the awesome Richard Fitzwilliams. Welcome back, Richard. How are you?
Hey, great pleasure to be back. Yes, I have seen it.
So there we are. Share with us then, do the review.
Which I thoroughly enjoyed, I have to say. It's a deliciously subversive look at a future where the robot takes a moral stance if it feels something is good or bad for you, and is far from malleable. So as I think you've been looking at Her and Blade Runner 2049, and I think you'd have a completely different take on it. I thought it was very well made. I loved it visually, and it had a super sense of humour.
Wow, that's amazing. Thank you.
They're speechless.
You have made two undergraduates and filmmakers of tomorrow very happy indeed. Exactly.
Well, I would just end with a quotation from Chairman Mao, if I could think of one.
Nicely. I see what you did there. Actually, why did you have the Chairman Mao connection in there? It's out of interest, I guess.
Well, strangely enough, we have a housemate who uses it as a prop for comedy value. So we thought it was quite strange of him to have that. And we had this joke where the robot would turn into something subversive and a bit out there. So we just figured, why not?
And it was, you know, it was there. It was in our possession.
Of course, I mean, had you done that 50 years ago in Maoist China, you would have actually been shot.
Oh, yeah.
You wouldn't have been able to go around with a Marilyn Monroe umbrella either.
Exactly. So a little bit of factual challenges there, a little bit of advisory, sort of caveat from that point of view. We're talking about the upcoming generation of wonderful filmmakers. We've sadly lost Milos Forman, of course, Academy Award winner. A few words, I think, from your behalf, Richard, on the great work that obviously The One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, director, and Amadeus.
And so on. These are the two films. If you think of Milos Forman, you think of these two, because One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest received Academy actual Oscars for all the categories in which it was nominated. Now, that is so rare, done, I think, by, it happened one night in Gigi, but certainly something that hardly ever has happened in the history of the Academy. And those two movies were perfection. I mean, there's no question he coaxed a marvellous performance out of Jack Nicholson in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And I happened to meet F. Murray Abraham. It was quite interesting. Recently, he was on stage in London. And he has this gloriously malign presence as Salieri. There's no doubt at all that he's still got this this very, very strong presence, but it's interesting that people apparently don't recognize him. You know, he just goes around and nobody tends to come up to him and congratulate him or talk about his roles. But if you look at the Milos Forman's his legacy, I mean, I think he did make these two movies, and everyone accepted that they were pretty near perfection. He made a certain number of other films, but it was only this, curiously, it did very, very well at Cannes. I enjoyed The People versus Larry Flint. I could never see why, I have to be frank, I couldn't see why it was so highly thought of. But it was, and no question with Cuckoo's Nest. I mean, it was marvellous and it was gloriously anarchic. No question, also Amadeus, well, I mean, the stage play, Peter Sheffield, I mean, it had really been a tremendous success. And so was the movie. It's interesting that there weren't other films. I didn't see Balmore, for example. Hair, it was good fun. But there weren't that number of others. It's interesting when your career, you're known for two things, particularly, and strange that he made quite a few other movies, but they certainly didn't have anything like the same impact.
George, did you catch any of Milos Forman's work?
I did, actually. I very much enjoy Man on the Moon, the Andy Kaufman biopic as well, because recently Netflix did the Jim Carrey behind-the-scenes documentary, the Jim and Andy one, and there's a lot of Milos's behind-the-scenes work in that, which is very astute.
And Holly, are you familiar with the oeuvre of the man?
Yeah, we watched that, didn't we? And I really like seeing behind-the-scenes footage and how Jim Carrey involves himself in all of that.
It all interconnects in a wonderful way. Richard, it's been fabulous as ever, and I will now invite Holly to deliver those last two questions to you, having, I think, managed to tick the boxes of all of those and having successfully passed the 48-hour film critic challenge. Actually, in your case, it was the 48-minute film critic challenge.
Just a word about the Commonwealth. I do think, yes, regarding Prince Charles, I mean, there's no question that he will succeed, I think, to the headship. You couldn't have a rotating headship of the Commonwealth simply because you can land up with ridiculous circumstances. For example, Syria's going to chair the United Nations Disarmament Forum on Chemical and Nuclear Weapons in Geneva next month. I mean, Idi Amin's Uganda was head of the Organization of African Unity in the 1970s.
Richard, can I bowl something out here? What about offering the possibility of an honorary chairmanship of the Commonwealth to either President Putin or President Trump?
Yes, no, that actually, these are sensible suggestions.
Kim Jong-un as a possible sort of first reserve, you know?
Yes, very definitely. I mean, Jeremy Corbyn might take that on board when he goes on to Andrew Marr and suggests a rotating presidency. If you rotate, you might get Sri Lanka, which has had an abominable record on human rights. I mean, the Commonwealth, I do think, is extremely valuable, most particularly for the intergovernmental organisations that we don't tend to hear a great deal about. But behind the scenes, you know, I think that's important. But you certainly couldn't have the Secretary General, a bureaucrat, as the head of the Commonwealth, with the profile that the British monarch, which is, after all, the world's most high-profile monarchy, which we have, gives it. The Commonwealth Games is the one thing every 4 years that people do recognise. But apart from that, I mean, the British have never been especially warm towards the Commonwealth. It was a brilliant idea, and post-Brexit, assuming that happens, we need
as we've seen with the Windrush as well. But isn't it wonderful when we actually have we can only get our royal family to speak more Italian? They'd be so cute. That's a different
like a hamster.
Final question, Holly.
Well, thank you very much for taking time to watch the turn of phrase.
It's a pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed your telephonic link experience with us this morning.
Experiences? I did indeed.
Yes. And, well, we'll hear from you next week then.
I look forward to it. Well done. Check it out.
Was that the intro I should have been in? Sea moon, is she? Sea moon, to me.
Certain songs just fit a sunny day. Do you not think, Shaley? Yeah.
Definitely, 100%.
That's why, back
walking
in the
on night, sunshine.
True. Yeah. Sea moon, wings. Just one of those areas where you just, you know, try. It's a bouncing along song, really. A bouncing along song. So we thank Gabriella Peralta from Gibraltar, Richard Fitzwilliams, a double whammy, and his film criticisms there. How can people get in touch, or indeed watch the movie we've been talking about from yourself, Holly?
Well, it is online on the YouTube under the name...
Oh, Manic Morris.
Yeah, so that's the username account. Mm-hmm. And if you type in the title, which is Turn of Phrase.
There we are. Turn of Phrase is the title. And it's Manic Morris, M-O-R-R-I-S.
It is indeed.
As in the car, as opposed to Maurice.
Yes.
Excellent. Online at present, Alan Stevens is back with us. Alan, how are you, sir?
Oh, God, a bit of a frog there. Oh. Fine, thanks.
We've already spoken to the Italians. We don't want to actually upset anybody other than the Europeans. Let's say, sorry, couldn't resist it. Do you speak any other languages other than English, Alan? Or is it just a case of, no, you know, they should understand me in whichever language I speak?
Double Dutch.
Nice. So we did that. Very good. That would have been well said with respect to Vincent Simone and so on. Now, we didn't have a chance earlier today, Alan, to talk with Stephanie Remeshevsky about your own sleep challenge, but we will put that to her later. This is our sleep expert. But how are the sleeping conditions going? Because last week, of course, Alan had been literally writing at 3 a.m. in the morning.
Before
4.
I was going to say it was definitely 4.
4, exactly. Before being woken up to do this particular radio production, that side of things. So have you managed to reset the whole thing? And are you preparing to go off to Mars? In which case, obviously, the whole times and Stephanie would say would have changed completely.
Go to Mars?
Mm.
No, sorry, that slipped me completely. I have caught up my sleep debt, yeah.
Good. It's all right. sleep dead.
Go to Mars? Yeah, don't be outrageous.
Did you notice that?
Yeah.
This is the joy that happens where you have some people who have actually been with us for the whole show and can actually see all the way that those things have been come together and how they fit together. And then, you know, folk who you come to, they haven't, you know, you can't even, no, it's just they've saved themselves for their own slot, etc. That's why we appreciate you, Alan. Holly, would you like to put any questions to Alan about what he's been doing in terms of writing actually heartfelt tributes to Peter Miles, which got lots of likes on Facebook, and a very positive tribute, an actor who was legendary within Doctor Who fans and so on and so forth, or indeed his upcoming article for Vorp magazine, which will be published in the not-too-distant future?
So any questions?
I think he's already put the questions for you, hasn't he, really?
Well, I think he
Yeah.
I think Alex...
Just answer those questions, Alan. Say that, go on. Say, answer those questions, Alan.
Cue Holly.
Sorry, no, I think George should ask you, because he is a
big Doctor Who fan. Cue George.
All right, throw me into it. I'd like to know about the Warped interview, to be honest.
Warp. Alan, the Warp time is yours. All 6 minutes of it.
I've only got 6 minutes. Okay, great. Well, Warp is a very professionally made magazine done by Gareth Kavanagh and Colin Blockhurst. And they've been going for a few years now, but they've decided they're going to re-release issues 1 and 2, which you can currently buy on eBay for about £45 each, as a sort of compendium. But there's a few articles which are sort of timed out, and they want to replace them. And I'm basically filling in some of the gaps. So I've written an article about Beep the Meep, which was a character who appeared in one of the early Doctor Who comic strips when Marvel took over in 1979. And also I'm writing about a backup character or backup strip character called Absalom Dark, Dalek Killer. And that's now getting towards the 6,000 word mark, because it's, of course, it was 1980 when he first appeared. And so there's a sizable amount of material to go through. So I've got to read the material, and I've interviewed various people like the editor of Doctor Who magazine back then called Des Skin, and Lee Sullivan, who is an artist and has worked on the comic strip. So it's got quite involved. There's two interviews I'm waiting, two people I'm waiting to hear back from, so I can just complete my final three paragraphs. And I know what to write, but I wouldn't mind using a bit of their some quotes for these people as well. So that's what I've been working on Warp.
And in case people are wondering, and I'm sure you'd be well aware of this, George, but Warp is named because it's the sounds that the TARDIS actually makes when it's taking off.
Well, it's a cartoon, what they recommend, you know.
Can I just ask where this magazine is available other than eBay?
Well, those are available on eBay because they've basically sold out, but they can be got from, if you just write, issue 3... They did 3 covers for issue 3, and I think 2 of the covers have sold out now, but the main one is still going. So if you wrote, Warp issue 3 into your Google Drive, then it would come up. You could order it there. But it's also available in various shops. It's available in Forbidden Planet in London for certain.
In fact, we're looking at warp.co.uk, VWORP, of course, if you want to actually have the full pronunciation, home page, by page, etc. As a Doctor Who fan, were you aware of Warp?
I wasn't, but I am now, so I'm definitely looking into it.
That's interesting, because the latest edition, which is issue 3, has got a free CD with it called The Mechanical Planet, which has got the Daleks in. And it's a full cast production.
With David Graham, the voice of Parker, and many others.
Yes, David Graham, who did the Dalek voices in the 1960s, he's come back and plays the Emperor of the Daleks. And it's based on a comic strip that was written by Terry Nation, the creator of the Daleks, and David Whittaker, who visited Doctor Who back in the early 60s. And I did an adaptation of it.
I see. It all fits together. And on the Stone Tapes, which I guess it's airing for the month of April at 7 p.m. this evening, Sam Stone will be talking about how she is also involved with the Demons episode of John Pertwee era, and how has written a sequel to it, which is also available with all sorts of other marvellous things. That's
Demons 2, The Return.
Thank you. I'm glad you said that.
I don't know if it is called that.
Well, it is, yes. It's what we call the Telos connection in many ways. The Telos, Caldor City, Magic Bullet connection, cross-promotion, various other bits and pieces as well. Classic Who or New Who, George?
Well, obviously, due to my age, I came into it through New Who. Mm-hmm. So I'm slowly working my way through the old mm-hmm. Who at the moment.
And are you one of those souls who say, well, of course, after David Tennant, I just lost interest?
Oh, God, no.
No. Yeah,
so. I'm not. Everyone who says that is arguably more a David Tennant fan than a Doctor Who fan, I think. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely true. I never really saw the appeal of David Tennant era at all.
You see, finally, Alan, we found somebody who has actually shared that a bit. We knew if we looked long and hard enough, it would connect together.
Oh, there's millions of us out there on the internet, just you don't interview them.
Definitely.
Well, there you go. Looking forward to Jodie Whittaker?
I'm very excited, actually, yeah. I'm a bit nervous about what might go on behind the scenes, like what day it's going to be on when they announce that kind
the
of
Chris
thing.
Oh, really? Isn't it going to be on Saturday?
Well, there's a rumour that it might be Sundays now.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, well... There we are.
No, the fact is that could be the case. I mean, the thing is that when the show came back in 2005, they were expecting it to have to not be a success. They thought that what would happen would it would probably peak at 6 million with the episode Dalek, and then after that they would move it to Friday nights. Now, if you look at series one, the Eccleston years or months they call it, don't they? The Eccleston months. The first six episodes are fairly child friendly with kind of burping dustbins and all that stuff or whatever it was, and then the second half is a lot more adult, and the reason why that is because they thought the second half would be shown on Friday nights. But when the series came back, the first episode got 10 million viewers which was far more than they expected, and it was all shown on Saturday night. Now, over the last couple of years, audiences have dropped quite considerably from the average of 7.4 million to around 5 million, I think. And so probably that's no longer considered to be a kind of Saturday night
spearhead
show.
Alan, we have to go. We have to say Shaylee, thank you. Holly, thank you. And indeed, George, thank you. We're back again next week. Alan, hopefully you'll be back again next week. The news is coming up. Can we all say, be seeing you. 1, 2, 3.
Seeing you.
Be seeing you.
Splendid.
Siren Radio, Lincoln.